So our ongoing theme is integration, and that involves skillful effort. It involves going out to the different members of our crowd and drawing them in, and it involves motivation. Which involves taking ourselves seriously. And if we really take ourselves seriously as Dharma practitioners, then we'll realize how much good we can do for ourselves and those around us and for the world through our practice. And we won't end up lost on the net, or whatever our particular way of wasting this wonderful opportunity is. Our various ways, we all have our ways. I was thinking about this thing about taking ourselves seriously as I was walking over here, and I realized that I think quite a bit of it is just about fixed self-view. Very often, yes, we're a Dharma practitioner, yes, we're a Dharmachari or Dharmacharini, our going for refuge is effective, but then we look at ourselves and think, yes, but there's nothing very special about me, I'll live my Dharma life. And we kind of appraise ourselves and come to the conclusion that, well, we're not going to really tear up trees on the path to enlightenment. And that really isn't the issue. That really isn't the point. However we find ourselves now is just the starting point. The trouble is that having some degree of fixed self-view, we feel like that's going to be the ending point as well. We might sort of stick a few good bits on, but fundamentally we're always going to be like this. But because there's nothing fixed about us, there really is nothing fixed about us, we don't have to be special now. We just have to practice. It's like the momentum thing. Yeah, it doesn't matter what we start as. A little kind of cluster of snowflakes at the top of a hill, they're nothing special, but they start to roll and they roll and they roll, and they turn into something very heavy, with a lot of momentum behind it. Think compound interest. Yeah, I mean seriously, it's like, you get some, you take out some loan, hopefully you start to save some money, at a few percent, compound interest, and it's only at the end of year one, you invested your £100 or £1,000 or €1,000, whatever it was, 1,000 kroner. And at the end of it, it's only worth, 1,030 or whatever. It doesn't look like anything like very much. But then you then reinvest, the 1,030, and it keeps on going. And 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, it really, if that's money you've borrowed, you get to the point where it's mounted up to a huge sum. There's lots of companies out there, finding people who can't afford to pay their bills and loaning them money at a few percent compound interest, and before they know it, they're completely broke. Yeah. So all that's happening is that you're just adding to the capital again and again and again. You're just adding small increments, small amounts on top, and it grows. It grows and it grows and it grows over the years. So we get focused on, I'm all right, I'm not bad, but I've got this difficulty and I'm not very like that, and so on. We focus on that, and we get fixed on that, we get fixated on that, but who cares in a sense where we start from, as long as there's enough of our energy behind us, and there is if we're effectively going for refuge, to just keep adding, to just keep taking another step, to just keep building the momentum. The other day, Sataloka was reminding me of something which Bhante said, I think in the first ever men's ordination course in 1981, along the lines of, people overestimate what they can achieve in 6 months. Yeah. So you make a kind of effort and a few months down the track you look and you think, well, that didn't make much difference. And you've given it your best shot and so you give up. Yeah. So people overestimate what they can achieve in 6 months and they underestimate what they can achieve in 5 years. So if you really just keep the momentum building, after 5 years, it's very noticeably different. And after 10 years, it's more different, in 20 years and 30 years. Yeah. So yes, if we could let go of that fixed sense of, I'm like this, and I'm always going to be like this, and see ourselves just as a vector, as something which is going in a direction, then we could take ourselves seriously. We don't have to, we can take ourselves seriously because we take our potential seriously. I'm sure if we met a lot of people who are very kind of renowned practitioners, some, yes, right from when they're little, they, as soon as they can talk, they want to be taken to the monastery or the nunnery or whatever, and they just want to practice. But most of them, we think, well, there's nothing special about them. But they turn themselves into something special. They turn themselves into something special. They weren't special to start with. The Dharma turned them into something special. We just have to give ourselves to the Dharma as best we can. And as best we can is good enough. Because again, often we're just setting ourselves these standards, that some really good Dharma practitioner would fulfill now. And again, we think, well, I don't live up to that, so there's nothing... I'm obviously not destined to be a great Dharma practitioner. But good enough is good enough. Yeah. We just aim to have a practice that keeps adding, but just so that the momentum keeps building. So to do that, we need to guard our sources of inspiration. And we also need to understand our existential situation. So we've been looking a little bit at recognizing that we do have a real opportunity and gratitude for that. But recognizing too that it won't last indefinitely. And then there are four reminders, so the third one is that actions have consequences. The karma I create shapes the course of my life. And often we don't, I don't know, karma is one of these things. Firstly, we tend to think about karma and rebirth is a difficult topic for some of us. I'm not going to talk about rebirth. I've done lots of talk about rebirth in Shabda the last couple of years, so I'm not going there. But actions have consequences. And yes, we all know that as Buddhists, there's dependent arising and how we put our energy sort of shapes what we become. It's basic kind of dependent arising. And yet, we don't really know it. If I really believed that keeping all the 10 precepts and practicing them fully, was just going to make me really happy. If I believed that, tremendous generosity was going to result in tremendous happiness, I'd be far more generous than I am. I wouldn't be thinking, oh yes, well I could give them that, but there again I might need it next month. If you know what I mean. Yeah. So there's obviously far further to go. So if we can get a sense that actions really have consequences, Dharma actions have big consequences. Yeah, we talk about weighty karmas out of, traditionally it talks about things like dhyana, but I think there are very weighty karmic consequences from entering a sangha, really practicing ethics as deeply as we can, from entering deeply into communication with other Dharma practitioners, from doing something for the world in terms of Dharma. I don't think it's just spending half an hour in states of bliss and happiness. So these things really have a shaping effect. And maybe it helps us to see that actions have consequences. The more we notice how all the time we're kind of choosing worlds to live in. Almost like sort of moment by moment. It's like there are doorways, like in that Ananda poem, there are different doorways that we can go through and explore. And so if we, through our actions and where we put our energy, different worlds open out. So if we could have a sense that never mind where we start from, never mind what we're like now, where we are is a good enough starting place, whether however we rate it. And that having found the Dharma and a good Sangha, we have a real opportunity. And that we need to make the most of it now. And we just put energy behind actions which created that momentum of gathering understanding of the Dharma, gathering energy behind the Dharma, more and more open-heartedness, then maybe not everything will be sorted in 6 months, but over time we would turn into someone who would be a real resource for the world. Or not, you know, because we are always acting in some kind of way. We're always creating some kind of world to live in, moment by moment. So we need to have that sense of potency, of which enables us to take ourselves seriously. And so often it feels like what we do doesn't matter. Particularly, we live more and more within structures and societies where it's not very obvious sometimes what difference our contribution makes. In some ways it's great, you know, being in a small situation. In some ways I feel fortunate having been around in the relatively early days. You know, when I was ordained, there were six of us, and that meant there were 44 active order members. So it felt like, you know, what your contribution, you could really sort of feel the difference. And in a small situation, you can really feel the weight of your difference, the effect that you have. But in large situations and in a world of 8 billion people, we've gone past 8 billion yet? Okay, 7 point something billion. Does what we do make much difference? We can't sort of feel the effects of that. So we have to really make the effects of that real to ourselves. We have to get a sense that this is the real thing and not the rehearsal, if you know what I mean. So, yes, actions have consequences, and Tara is part of the Karma family. She kind of presides over that action, that carrying the Dharma into action.
Can I ask a question?
You can ask a question.
Okay, this practical question. Plus, of all the members at the beginning do intense practice of the Dharma, and then later on they get married or they get kind of caught up in all the way.
Mm-hmm.
And then they still try to practice, but they always end up comparing what they were and what they are. How do you
overcome? Well, how can you work with that? Okay, so the question is that some order members have spent part of their lives in more intensive or potentially more intensive situations, and then they've been married and taken on other responsibilities, and so they compare their life now with how things were when they were able to perhaps devote more time to more obviously Dhamma activities and practice. I think the whole tendency of the mind to compare is generally very unhelpful. Like in the Sutta Nipata, the Buddha says, you know, comparing, thinking of yourself as superior to, inferior to, or equal to someone else is unhelpful. So the first thing is just to look at that tendency, because okay, we go back, we feel into the past, and maybe we were practicing more intensively then. Although good conditions don't guarantee that we practice more intensively. And yeah, we don't want to be too hard and fast about what are good conditions for Dharma practice, but let's take it that the conditions were better. So we look back, and what does that give us apart from a sense of frustration, or a sense that, oh dear, now we're not doing it properly or not so well? So in a way, are we not just causing ourselves dukkha looking like that? Because we can look back at all sorts of things in life and feel, oh, that was better, but now, when I was younger I had more energy, now I don't have so much, etc., etc. You know, if we want to, we can spend our lives, looking back in different ways, and it does seem to be a natural tendency of human beings. But the only good way to look back is to look back and have a sense of the kind of qualities that we had at that time. And it is possible to sort of feel your way back into the kind of quality of the practice that you were able to have, and then bring that into the present situation. So it's not the same as just looking back and thinking, oh, if only, and that was much better, and now what can I do, and it's limiting. And it's more like, okay, at that time we were more inspired, say. So how did that feel? How did it feel when in that situation we were really inspired by the Dhamma? So how would that feel now? That could be useful. All the rest is just Mara. It's just if we find our mind going back like that, see if we can feel into, okay, how it was to really, really be inspired, to feel, that energy really going into the Dhamma, and then bring that back, feel how that was in your body, and how it was in your heart, and how you looked at things. And bring that into the situation. And if you really have that in the situation that you're in now, however difficult it is, you'll find more ways of practicing now. Yeah? Does that help a little bit? Any other questions while we're here?
I suppose it's stating the obvious, but a moment ago when you were saying that it's hard to see the difference we make, like the obvious thing that occurred to me is, well, it's just individual people's lives. At the moment I'm quite busy, I'm quite active in the Dharmic sense, but actually the thing that really makes a difference is individual people. And seeing that they grow, and that's always accessible.
Yes, you watch individuals' lives unfold. And also you watch how those individuals coming together can create something. Yes, you may not be able to see just what because of dependent arising is so kind of complex. You can never see what your contribution was. It's like on this retreat is a co-creation of all of us, and we can never really kind of separate out what effect we had from everybody else, you can kind of go, oh, you know, sort of, some people were looking after the shrine or whatever, but actually the whole thing is a co-creation. And in a way, if we widen out our vision, then that's all we need to see, is that the whole situation that we're in is becoming more and more full of the Dharma. You know, it's like, I can't imagine what it's like for Bhante, you know, sort of watching from, you know, sitting around with a few people in a basement in Monmouth Street in London, and this whole kind of unfolding more and more and more and more and more, you know, to something which goes around the world and 2,000 board members, active board members, and so on. Yeah, that was a kind of co-creation. All you need to feel, in a way, is that where you're putting your energy is a really good place to put that energy, and that what you're helping to create is something which is really beneficial. Okay, should we do a bit of meditation? So as we're sitting here, just for a few moments, let's see if we can let mind just fall open. Traditional images, like you've got a sheaf of hay, something, some sticks which are all tied together and they're standing up supporting one another, and then you cut the string, you cut the rope, and they all just fall open. So you can just let everything go. So usually what happens is there's a little space, there's some space, and then everything starts up again. So when everything starts up again, then we feel our connection with the earth. out of that solid base. See if we feel our connection with the sky. Again, we bring awareness into the body. Turning towards whatever we find. Feeling the tide of the breath flowing in and flowing out. really coming freshly to the breath. Appreciating it and valuing it. This unique moment, we can work with the first of the two reminders, first two of the four reminders. So we breathe in, appreciating this gift of life, and we breathe out, not knowing anything about another breath. If this works for you, if it feels okay, breathing out as if it could be the last one. But then there is another one. So welcoming that, taking it as a gift. breathing out. If maybe this is the last one, making it a very aware, maybe even a very loving one. Grateful, appreciative for the in-breath. Receiving it like a precious gift. As the meditation comes towards an end, you've been absorbed to some degree in the breathing, in the practice. In that state, one thing which is helpful to do is to make positive wishes. We could just take a minute to wish that our Dharma practice deepens, the directions of body, speech and mind become more and more positive, become more and more powerful, more and more effective. Gathering momentum. Transforming us and influencing everything around.